Welcome to Words to Mouth, an author interview talk show where readers meet authors beyond the printed page and win free books. I'm your host, Carrie Runnels, and I produce this show to introduce you to new and seasoned authors and the books they write. This show is a companion to my blog website at wordstomouth.com, so please be sure to check that out. Today, I'm very excited to introduce to you Christy Kiernan. She's the author of Matters of Faith. Welcome, Christy.
Hey, Carrie. Thanks.
It's good to have you on the show. I'm glad we got a chance to connect. I want to talk to you about your book, Matters of Faith, but first, I wanted to hear a little bit about you, if that's okay.
Sure. You want me to
Just tell us a little bit about your upbringing and maybe how that's affected your writing.
Okay. Well, I grew up in Southwest Florida. We moved there when I was only one, and we kind of moved around a lot. We moved from one town to another pretty much once or twice a year. There's a little town in between Tampa and Naples in South Florida. I've probably lived there. And the beach was a very big part of my childhood. With every new town that we moved to, I looked for the beach first and then the library or the little bookstore second.
Oh, okay.
And I was a heavy reader from a very young age, and at about the age of six, I knew that I wanted to be a writer. I was very clear in my mind that that was exactly what I should do with my life. Mm-hmm. But like a lot of people, you know, as I got older and got through high school, kind of the act of daily living sort of takes over. And I didn't write too much after high school. You know, it was in the back of my head. And I was having a conversation with my grandfather one day. He'd just turned 80 years old, and my family tends to stay up late at night, so it was like midnight, you know, and we're having this deep conversation, and he's talking about the things that he regretted not doing in his life. And one of the things he'd always regretted not doing was writing. He really was a storyteller. Mm-hmm. And I went to bed that night. I had just turned 30 and kind of thought, you know, I don't want to be 80 years old listing the things that I regret not doing. And why did I let that dream die? And I went home the next day and fired up the computer and started my first novel, which was terrible.
Well, now, did you go to school? Did you go to college after high school?
I did not. I was on my own kind of young. I actually was living on my own before I graduated from high school.
Okay.
And so I was in the work world at a very young age. And I did not go to college and did not take any type of writing course.
So you were sort of doing, just working in business setting or something like that?
Actually, I started at TGI Fridays when I was 18 years old. And
hey, I worked there.
Didn't everybody at some point?
Fun time, yeah.
I was there for about 13 years.
Okay.
I kind of did everything. You know, I was a waitress and a bartender and a new store opener, and by the time I actually left that company, I was a regional accountant.
Oh, okay.
And then after that, I went into estimating in construction.
Aha.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I'd love to hear those stories where you have that, it's somewhere innate inside, and you just, at some point, there's no denying it, and you just have to go ahead and put pen to paper. So I think we had I encourage the listeners to go to the website, because I'm going to post a written interview that Christy and I kind of went back and forth with. But you did mention that you had written a few books beforehand, before your first novel was published. So this kind of, it's been a kind of tough road. You had had some persistence that you needed to kind of put out there to get this thing really rolling.
It was a tough road. I wrote, like I said, that first book, and it was pretty bad. It didn't deserve to get published, and it never will, and that's all right, but you know, it taught me that I could sit down and actually write a full-length novel, which is not an easy thing to do. And then my husband thought, you know, he looked at the big stack and said, well, you know, she really can kind of do this, and so he encouraged me to start on the second one, and that was called Running in the Family. And I don't think that one will get published. Recently, my agent encouraged me to pull it back out, because it's the book that she originally took me on with, and she really always loved the book and really believed in it. But I think it's probably a book of my past, and I think I'm going to leave it there. But it made the rounds of editors, and pretty much what everybody said was that it was unremittingly grim.
Oh.
More than one person said that. And so that didn't sell, and I wrote a third one, called Crash, and that was before the movie came out. I had that first.
Huh.
And my agent hated it. And during this entire time, of course, you know, these books didn't take 3 months to write. They took, you know, a year or a year and a half to write. So all of this time added up, and during it, we really were sort of kind of slowly going broke. You know, I wasn't bringing any money home. I'd quit my job to really pursue this full time. And right after my agent said that she hated it, my husband and I kind of sat down and had a real serious discussion about if I was going to continue to pursue this. Mm-hmm. And if I was, that we had to do something drastic. And I had this book in mind about two sisters. And I had run the idea past my agent, and she loved the idea. And I just said, you know, I really want to write this last book. You know, this will be it. Just this last one. You know, and then we'll call it. And he said, how bad do you want it? I said, I want it pretty bad. So the next week we sold my car. And I wrote Catching Genius. And that book took from the start, from sitting down and putting the first word to page, about 2 years to finish. Because during that time that I didn't have a car, I was also kind of dealing with a lot of family things. My grandmother had been diagnosed with Parkinson's. I kind of wound up the primary caretaker of my grandparents. And so after that 2 years, and Catching Genius finally got finished, finally got sent out into the world, and was bought the first week.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. That's awesome. I mean, that really speaks to sticking to it, because, you know, a lot of people would have gotten frustrated and given up. So Yeah, but that's encouraging to other people out there that, you know, who have kind of feel like they're hitting a brick wall.
I hit a lot of brick walls, but, you know, you eventually smash through them, hopefully.
Well, let's talk a little bit about matters of faith. I love what Jacqueline Mitchard, the author of Deep End of the Ocean, says. She says, matters of faith was so good and true and real that I forgot I was reading a book. To me, you know, that speaks really to your gift of storytelling, because sometimes when you're reading, you know, the author, sometimes you can get distracted with the use of language and words. And that's how I felt, too, when I was reading it. You just kind of get lost in the story. You don't get distracted with the writing. Does that make sense?
Well, thank you. Yeah, I hope so. You know,
yeah.
That's certainly what I hope to do. And thank you. Although I certainly love a beautifully turned phrase, and I love beautiful words and gorgeous writing. But you have to have that story too. So thank you very much.
And that's not to say you're not a gifted writer, because I mean that there's beautiful writing in there. But tell us what motivated you to write the book in the first place.
Well, I always knew, I knew I wanted to be a writer when I was about six. But when I was growing up, I spent my summers bouncing back and forth each week between two sets of grandparents up in Tennessee. One set of grandparents, my father's parents, were Southern Baptists. And mm-hmm. the other set, which is really my mother's mother and her husband, were Episcopalians. And so on one Sunday, we'd go to the Baptist church, and on the next Sunday, we'd go to the Episcopalian church, which, you know, I mean, the religions really could not be more different.
Right.
But that was just a very normal way for me to grow up. And then when we came back home to Florida, you know, for the school year, we didn't go to church at all. And then when we moved to Chicago for 2 years when I was like 9 years old, and in the neighborhood that we moved into, I made a lot of friends who were Jewish. And my best friend's parents were kind enough to invite me into their home during a lot of their holidays. And so at the age of nine, I really was aware that religion, not necessarily faith, but that religion was a choice. You really could decide, oh, I'm going to be this. I decide to be Catholic. I decide to be Jewish. And I thought that was really fascinating. And we were supposed to do a book report, like a two or three page book report. And they called it an open book report, so you could choose whatever book you wanted. and I had found a large book on world religion in the house. And I wound up turning in like this 15-page,
dissertation.
Dissertation on world religions. And
what age was this?
This was at 9.
Okay.
Right? Yeah.
You probably blew your teacher away.
Yeah, she was kind of like, didn't follow directions. That's about all she had to say.
Oh.
But so I was just very aware that religion was a choice, and that most people didn't quite understand that. And I knew at that young of an age that I eventually was going to write about religion as a choice.
Mm-hmm.
So that idea was working in my head for years and years. But then about 4 years ago, there was a story that made national headlines about a young Canadian woman. And it's funny because when I talk about this, when I, give public talks about this, I see people nodding their heads. A lot of people remember this story. It's about Christina DeForge, who was a 15-year-old Canadian. And it was reported that she died after kissing her boyfriend, who had peanut butter on toast hours earlier.
Oh, yes.
See, you remember it, too.
I remember it.
A lot of people remember this story, and it struck me also. And I just, my first thought was, my God, are these allergies really that sensitive? And then my second thought was her parents. How do you allow your child who has something this sensitive even out of the house? And yet you have to. You have to. You have to teach them to live in the world, and you have to, at a certain age, trust that they and the people around them are going to make the right decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And how in the world do you do that as a parent? It just must be so frightening. And so I started doing research. Not really thinking about the fact that I was going to be writing about it, but just because it interested me, and I wanted to find out more about it. And then a couple of months later, they found out that that was not what she had actually died of. She had been at a party where people were smoking, both cigarettes and marijuana, and she had severe asthma, and she wound up dying from complications due to her asthma.
Oh, see, I didn't know that.
A lot of people don't know the end of that story.
Yeah.
But because I was following this stuff so closely, of course, the original story is splashed across the front page. The fact that it didn't actually happen, that's a little tiny thing on page 10.
Right.
But but the fascination was already there, and I had already done so much research. And again, it had really turned into me wanting to explore how parents deal with this. And one day, I think like a lot of writers do, it was a light bulb moment, and those two ideas, choice of religion and food allergies, just collided in my mind, and I went, there's your book.
Yeah. Well, you do explore, the complexities of relationships in this family. I mean, we all have it, but, between the son and the mother and then Cal and his mother, it's just there's a lot of complicated relationships there. And I guess it really does speak to us loving one another through our imperfections and, forgiving. And as you said before, the whole idea of seeking faith and kind of that thin line between faith and fanaticism,
Exactly. One thing that that has always, and I imagine I will always write about, is the fact that I don't know one single perfect family. I don't know one. I'm sure that there are some out there, but I don't know them. and, we all have our own individual. You don't have the same relationship with your father that you have with your mother. They are completely independent relationships, and there are different triggers and different things that you trust in each of them. And the same with your siblings, and the same with your grandparents, and that has always sort of fascinated me. We are very complex creatures when it comes to our relationships with our family, and I always enjoy exploring each individual one, and then what happens when everybody sort of comes together.
Yeah, I think when you're growing up, you think your family is the only one that's dysfunctional to some extent. then you find out, okay, that's just dysfunctionality is normal.
Exactly.
You know? Well, what did you end up learning about yourself from writing this story that maybe you didn't expect?
Oh, that's an interesting question. That I didn't expect. Probably that I can have sympathy for someone who a lot of people probably consider a villain. Mm-hmm. I have never really written a bad guy before. And you would have to say that Ada, mm-hmm. the girlfriend in this book, is pretty much a villain. I mean, she really does a thing that could have caused somebody to die. And she mm-hmm. did it on purpose. And she did it mm-hmm. knowing full well, you know, knowing what could have happened. And I've never written anyone with bad intentions before. And I was really nervous to do that. But as I got into it, I realized that even villains have their own story. And they wound up
right.
that way for a reason.
Right.
And I think I found sort of a separate well of sympathy and empathy within me for the people in the world who we might think are the villains, and
right.
remembering that they have a story too. Might not make you any happier with them right now, but that you really have to kind of strive to understand people a little bit better.
Well, and that speaks to, you know, we tend to want to see somebody as all black or all white, and everybody, if you take the chance to learn about them, has good and bad, and, you know, there's a certain level of compassion that you need to have to, like you say, to understand that person.
There are lots and lots of shades of gray in everyone.
That's right. Part of what I like to offer my listeners on the show is an opportunity to get to know authors on a more personal level and find out what's important to them beyond their books and the craft of writing. And I know that you shared a little bit of this on our written interview, but on this audio interview, would you be willing to share a personal experience, possibly a challenge or something that at one time might have seemed like a failure that has affected your life maybe in a positive way?
Gosh, you know, all of my failures, I believe, have wound up affecting my life in a positive way.
That's a great way to look at it.
Well, you know, you try something else. I will say this, that there's nothing that I ever started out to do that I didn't eventually go ahead and get to do. The writing thing really is the most perfect example of it, and I talked a little bit before about kind of slowly going broke, winding up having to sell my car. That, to me, certainly was a failure. I did not realize that anybody would perceive that as kind of just going after my dreams. I, at the time, was horribly embarrassed by that and perceived it as a failure, absolutely, that I had failed 3 times now to do this thing that I said that I was going to do. So for me, mm-hmm. that was a failure 3 times over. Beach, running in the family, crash. Failure, failure, failure. And I failed so badly that I actually had to sell my vehicle.
But I love the fact, I really admire the relationship that you and your husband have, because that's, you know, for him to support you through that and have the faith in you is really, it's awesome. And I think that is somewhat rare to have that team player on your side that's saying, hey, you know,
rare.
If you really believe in this.
He is consistently my biggest cheerleader. I think once, you know, at first, look, God bless the man. I mean, I came home from this. My husband and I have been together for 18 years. And when I came home from that visit with my grandfather, we had been together for 9 years. And I had never really talked to him about this childhood dream. I had never said to him, you know, when we were first dating, oh, but what I really want to do is write. You know, all my time was taken up making a living.
Right.
And so when I came home from this trip, and just kind of out of the blue said, oh, by the way, I want to be a novelist. He was kind of like, okay. and so, you know, it was very much kind of for him. I think he viewed it as a hobby on that first one.
Right.
But then when I actually got an agent on the second one, he suddenly went, you know what? I think you really do want to do this, and I think you really can. And ever since then, there has not been, there have been so many times that I have said, I think I just need to go on some interviews and go back and get a regular day job. And he has said, absolutely not. Absolutely not. We'll do something else. We'll stop, you know, taking clothes to be dry cleaned. We'll do this. We'll do that. And he has gone ahead and taken those steps. You know, he hasn't just said those things and then made me feel bad about them later. He's gone ahead and taken those steps and has never, you know, and never once threw it in my face. Never once when we only had one car and I had to take it in order to go take care of my grandparents. I mean, there were times, you know, the guy actually called a cab to get to work because I had a car. You know, and in a big city, that's no big deal. But, you know, we're out here in the suburbs. You know, calling a cab is something that you do when you've, you know, had a little too much to drink.
Right.
So he has, you're right, it is unusual, and he has been incredibly supportive and remains so. And I am very, very lucky to have that.
Yeah, that's truly a gift. And, you know, I wish, I mean, I've been married about 17 years, too, and, you know, early on, I didn't necessarily have that perspective, but having that kind of relationship where you are a team player and your spouse's biggest cheerleader, it's like Dr. Phil says, I think it's, you know, that soft place to fall. It's wonderful when you feel, like you said, I need to get a job or whatever, and he's going, no, he believes in you. It's kind of like that. You're so energized by what you do and you're passionate about it, and it's infectious, and it's just neat to see that. You know, you stuck it out, and he supported you, and look.
Yeah, his belief in me is stronger than my belief in myself. There's no question.
That's very nice.
He's not perfect before
me. Oh, no. No, none of us are, but I wanted to mention to the listeners that Christy has offered a couple free copies of her book, Matters of Faith. Go to wordstomouth.com and leave a comment under this interview post, or call 206-309-7318 and leave a voicemail comment, and you'll be entered to win. Just be sure to email me with your mailing address at carrie@wordstomouth.com. Christy, what are you reading right now?
Right now, I am reading, I have to get the title right, A Spring Without Bees, which is about colony collapse disorder. Because, you know.
Oh.
Yeah. Doing a little research for the next book.
Okay.
I just got finished with Queen of the Road, which is a travel memoir by Doreen Orion.
Okay.
Which is
recommend that.
Absolutely hilarious. I always have like three books going at the same time.
You know, that's funny because I've been doing these interviews for a while now, and I think every writer is like that. We all have piles of books around us.
Oh, yeah. Well, you have different books for different things, you know.
Yeah. Everybody's researching their next book, and then they've got their, you know, a lot of times something just to kind of escape into. And
Okay, that's my next one, my escape book this week is Breaking Cover by J.D. Rhodes.
Okay.
What else? And then, you know, I've got a stack.
Yeah.
Waiting for me.
Tell me, before we go, what is your biggest message to our listeners?
Well, you know, we've talked a lot about kind of pursuing your dream and sort of failing and getting back up there. And I guess that would certainly be my message, that it's not too late. You know, just because your life has gone one way, I always encourage everybody to look back and think about what they wanted to do when they were a kid, because I think that is our clearest time that we're aware of what our real abilities are, our innate abilities. I think we're very clear on that as children, and that's kind of where we come up with, oh, you know, I want to do this when I grow up, and look back and remember what it was you wanted to do, and if you're not happy with your life right now, then look for a way that you can incorporate your childhood dream into your life and work on it.
Yeah.
Sometimes it works out.
It's interesting. I interviewed Jennifer Fox. She started the Strengths Movement, and it's, you know, geared towards kids. And that's her biggest message is to find what you're passionate about. And sometimes it's not necessarily what you're good at. You know, it's not, you can be good at something, but if you don't have that passion for it, like you had passion for writing, you end up sometimes going down a path that when you're about 40, you go, wait a second.
How did I get here? Exactly.
Uh-huh.
So
I joke about that because I say, I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up until I was about 35. So,
and
it's still evolving.
And now are you doing it?
I am doing it. I'm having a blast. You know, it's just incorporating, like you said before, making sure that you can handle the bills and all that while doing the things that you love. So hopefully that'll come.
Well, I think that's wonderful. And good luck to you and to everyone on that.
Thank you. Well, tell us what's next for you real quick.
Next for me is trying to finish up the book that I'm writing right now. I'm trying to sort of, you know, be on the road with matters of faith at the same time that I'm trying to finish up this book. And this is the first time that I've been put in that situation. So I'm really just sort of trying to learn how to be a novelist as a career.
Right.
And that is kind of taking up a lot of time. And hopefully that book will be out next year, probably late in the year. We'll see what happens with that. Other than that, I'm just looking forward to vacation and hearing, that more people have picked up and read Matters of Faith, and hopefully they'll let me know what they thought about it.
Is there a way for readers to get in touch with you on your website? Can they converse with you, like, through email or a forum or anything there?
Yeah. There's a contact button on my website, and it brings up, you know, if you just want to say hi to me, you just use the actual contact form. If there's something that, you know, you actually need to talk to a publicist about, their information is on there also.
Okay, and your website address?
www.kristykiernan.com.
That's easy, and it's KristyKiernan, and I will put that link on my website.
Thanks.
So, well, Kristy, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Oh,
I appreciate
it. Was my pleasure.
It.
Thank you.
Okay, and like I said, I'll put the links to Kristy on my website, wordstomouth.com. And again, please feel free to call 206-309-7318 and share your thoughts about the book or this interview. And thank you to all you wonderful listeners and viewers who have left comments on the website and reviews on iTunes. I really appreciate that and really hope to build a sense of community here at Words to Mouth. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes to get Words to Mouth delivered to your computer for free so you can listen to it whenever and wherever you'd like. And thank you to Natalie Brown for her song, You Gotta Believe, from the PodSafe Music Network. And thanks for listening. Take good care until next time.